This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and guests about politics. It's Thursday, August 29th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker. The number of measles cases around the world, which had been rapidly declining in recent years, is rising again. In the first 6 months of 2019, there were more outbreaks than any other year since 2006, according to the World Health Organization. Public health officials attribute the increase in the United States and the United Kingdom to anti-vaccination sentiment. Some private schools in Santa Monica and Beverly Hills report that extraordinarily high numbers of students are not vaccinated. And New York State has been fighting a particularly pernicious measles outbreak centered in Orthodox Jewish communities in Rockland County and Brooklyn. The state has reported 1,046 measles cases in the past year out of a national total of 1,203. In June, Dr. Howard Zucker, New York State's health commissioner, made a public service announcement urging parents to vaccinate their children.
Hi, I'm Dr. Howard Zucker, New York State's health commissioner and a pediatrician. I want to talk to you about an aggressive anti-vaccine movement that's causing confusion and fear. It's leading some parents to delay or even avoid vaccinating their children. Unfortunately, it's one reason we're seeing more and more reports of these diseases here in New York and across the nation. I assure you, vaccines are safe and effective. I'm a father. My kids are vaccinated.
Nick Palmgarten, a New Yorker staff writer, joins me to discuss the religious and political roots of the anti-vaccination movement and how public health officials are fighting it. Nick, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
You recently wrote a piece for The New Yorker about the measles outbreak, focusing it on New York State. So maybe you can tell us how we got, as a country, from virtually eliminating the disease almost 20 years ago to this point.
Well, it seems that the anti-vaccination movement has made enough inroads into the population and the popular understanding of the efficacy of vaccines to erode in certain communities and in small pockets of the culture at large what we call herd immunity, which is, you know, a level of protection against viruses or diseases that's high enough to protect even those few who would say no to vaccines. You know, if you have 95% of a population vaccinating, then those 5% that aren't vaccinating are protected by the majority, the herd immunity.
So scientists have repeatedly and emphatically dismissed the purported link between autism and vaccines. But that's where a lot of this originated. And maybe we can go back and you can tell us, what was the original source of that idea?
I'm not exactly sure what the original source was. I know that the source that everyone has referred to over the years and the study that caused the most problems was a study by Andrew Wakefield, a doctor in Great Britain. He did a study that was published in The Lancet. It was later pulled.
In 1998?
Yeah. But that study, it was only, I think, 8 or 9 or a dozen subjects. It was a really small pool. But he made the connection between the MMR vaccine and autism. And that study, you know, is sort of ground zero for a lot of anti-vax arguments.
So he was discredited as a scientist after
yes.
that, but he's kept at it right up until, you know, a couple of years ago when he released this documentary, Vaxxed.
Vaxxed, yeah.
Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, it's a film that advances the idea that there's a conspiracy to cover up the connection.
A conspiracy by?
You know, the government, CDC,
uh-huh.
the federal government.
And that presumably this has been widely distributed among those who already have this fear.
And, you know, there's a whole literature of it. There are videos or other people. It's very widespread.
One of the things that really interested me in your piece is how the public health organizations in New York traced the source of the outbreak in Rockland County. It was real detective work.
Yeah, it's real forensics. There are these public health officials, they're epidemiologists, whose job it is basically to track each case, both where it came from and where it might have gone. It's really about locating people in space and understanding the way that the viruses work. In this case, they went to the town of New Square, which is in Rockland County, New York, and they went to a synagogue where 7,000 people had been worshiping during a holiday, and they were able to figure out where this boy who had the case that brought it to New Square, where he had walked you know, who he'd walked past, and then follow each of those people. It's pretty interesting.
And why has the Orthodox community in New York State, particularly in Rockland County, been so hard hit by this outbreak?
Well, the Orthodox community does have its pockets of anti-vax sentiment, but they're not alone in that. One of the reasons that the Orthodox community has been vulnerable this time around in New York is that there are outbreaks. There are a lot of measles in Ukraine, and there are a lot of measles in Israel. And because of the travel of people on holidays to and from those places, that's made this particular community, the Orthodox community, vulnerable.
And the boy in the synagogue had come from Israel.
Right. Patient Zero was an Israeli boy who, the theory is anyway, he caught it from someone who had gone to the Ukraine for what's called Hasidic Burning Man, a sort of wild weekend in Uman in Ukraine. And so, you know, as someone explained to me, this town of New Square, which is, you know, I think 8,500 people, and it's just 1 square mile, functions like an international city because of the travel and people coming and going. I mean, it's almost like a mini New York.
And yet very insular.
Yes.
So what role have religious exemptions played in the spread of diseases like the measles?
Religious exemptions have been very significant. It's been used as a lever by all kinds of communities, not always religious communities, to avoid the vaccine regimen that the, you know, that the public health officials would like us all to follow. In the Orthodox community, it was used to exempt kids going to school, but it's also been used by non-religious people. There's an example of my story from 13 years ago, a great New York Times story by Donald McNeil. He joined a church in New Jersey that had been set up by chiropractors to avoid vaccinations.
Hi, it's David Remnick. If you're enjoying this podcast, you might enjoy even more of what The New Yorker has to offer. Becoming a subscriber gives you unlimited access to The New Yorker, including Pulitzer Prize-winning reporting, insightful cultural commentary, and fiction and poetry. You'll also enjoy our delightful cartoons, crossword puzzles, narrated stories, and much more. This past year, our readers were gripped by Ronan Farrow's profile of Elon Musk, Heidi Blake's extraordinary tale about Dubai's runaway princesses, and much more. Visit newyorker.com to gain access to all this and more. Use the code POD15, P-O-D-1-5, to secure a 15% discount on a yearly digital subscription. That's POD15 for a 15% discount.
So one of the things that's extraordinary about this crisis is that we're not just talking about ultra-Orthodox Jews here, not even just Christian Scientists, evangelical Christians. We're talking about affluent yoga moms in Beverly Hills. So the Hollywood Reporter, I think you cite this piece, found rates of vaccination in some private schools in Santa Monica and Beverly Hills that are roughly the same as in Chad and South Sudan.
Well, I think everybody wants what's best for their children. And people have different ways of arriving at that state of wanting what's best for your children. People on the right, on the left, they find information on the internet, and there's a lot out there. And there are examples of people being harmed by vaccines. There's a lot of anecdotal connections between vaccines and all kinds of problems. So they're vulnerable to that fire hose of information. Also, I talk about this in the piece a little bit, the idea that being anti-vax or saying no to vaccinations, it's not just an opting out. It's also an opting in. It's a way of declaring yourself a member of a social group. And in this case, it's a group of people that are suspicious of Big Pharma, you know. And that I mean, there's a rationale in an abstract to all that. But, you know, it's not good for the child or for the community of children.
Well, and public health officials told you that the virus they're fighting is more about vaccine hesitancy and refusal than about measles itself. And it feels very much a part of the broader conspiratorial thinking that has infected the country in all kinds of ways. As you just mentioned, suspicion of authority, rejection of certain kinds of expertise, and even, you know, the defense of individual liberty versus the common good.
Right. I mean, there has been sort of a movement of, you can't tell me what to do in this country for a while. And it's obvious, but the internet and social media has amplified what would otherwise be fringe information or misinformation. I mean, there has always been information. I think in, you know, probably in Renaissance Florence, there was misinformation. It was used as a tool by powerful people to undo each other. We now have Russian involvement in elections, Brexit, so on and so forth.
And we also, by the way, have this country, as you mentioned, has a checkered history of medical experimentation, going back to Tuskegee, Henrietta
yes.
Lacks, et cetera.
Right. It's not crazy to be skeptical. It's sensible to be skeptical.
So we just got, just before I came into the studio, we just got the first letter criticizing your piece. And the writer says that in a 9,000-word story, Palmgarten couldn't find the space to interview even one person who has suffered injuries due to vaccines. So what do you say to that?
Well, the piece was 8,000 words. you know, I was explicit in the piece, and I went into this intent on not relitigating the vaccination question. I am not a scientist. You know, I can only convey what public health officials, what scientists, what doctors tell me overwhelmingly. In the same way, if I were writing about climate science, I would accept the findings of the scientists. So in this case, I accept the findings of the scientists. I believe vaccines work.
So how does Zucker go about changing minds that seem so stubbornly fixed? There was only one fatality in the end among the 296 reported cases, and the pace of infection slowed over the summer. And yet he and others in the field describe this phenomenon as part of an all-out war on science.
Right.
And yet he somehow succeeded in getting a handle on this thing.
Well, it's a lot of it's just a ground war. It's sort of going house to house and getting people vaccinated at a high enough rate to restore the herd immunity. It turns out that we are well vaccinated on a grander scale as a society. You know, New York State, I think, has a 98% vaccination rate. So while there will be these outbreaks and pockets where the numbers have dipped, we are on the whole, you know, well prepared for this kind of thing at the moment. The trend isn't always your friend.
He seems to have a way of getting in and talking to people in a way that doesn't make them immediately get their defenses up and listen and reflect on what he's saying. It's a real conversation. So are there lessons here for the broader political climate?
The public health officials and a lot of doctors and hospital officials have recognized that the issue isn't so much the fringe that believes very strongly in anti-vaccination ideas. It's really the vaccine hesitant. It's those who are not sure, who've heard this, who've heard that, and who want nothing more than the best for their kids, but who just aren't sure to the extent where when they go to the doctors that they say, not this time, let's do it next time, or I'm going to do some more research on Google, I'm going to ask some more of my friends. Those are the people that need to be persuaded.
Like the undecided voter.
Yeah. They are the undecided voter. But the means to do so, that's what they're working on. They're realizing that condescension doesn't work. Persuasion works. And it helps if everybody in the chain, whether receptionists, nurses, doctors, the doormen in the hospital, everybody is in support of the idea of vaccination for the greater good of all. That's the idea.
Thank you so much, Nick.
Thank you for having me on.
Nick Palmgarten is a staff writer at The New Yorker. This has been The Political Scene. You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts by searching for The New Yorker in your podcast app and find more political analysis and commentary on newyorker.com. Feel free to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Our theme music is by Russell Gillespie. This program was produced by Alex Barron for newyorker.com with assistance from Kylie Warner. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.